It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. Talking to Sean Ryan today. Sean is putting out the final issue of Prowler this week. Prowler number 6 will be on stands this Wednesday, so we wanted to have a discussion right before it hit. Sean's in L.A., so this is a Skype call, but he did do a signing at Chimeras Comics, which is how we met him and set this up. I hadn't talked to him before, but he's fantastic, and we talk about his run on Nova, and we talk about his run on Suicide Squad, and we also just get into some stuff about Legion on FX and the DC shows, and it's just a really, really delightful conversation with somebody who's just right at the crest of their career, which is fantastic. But before we get to that, I really want to talk about the elephant in the room. If you're into comics, you probably know that Bernie Wrightson passed away today as I'm recording this. He was 68 years old. He had been fighting brain cancer for the last few years. Needless to say, the man was a legend in the industry, one of the greatest horror artists ever, did some beautiful Batman work, created Swamp Thing, and this was something that hit me personally. So Steven and I did an entire episode as a tribute to Bernie Wrightson. We're going to run that next week. So really wanted to get the conversation with Sean out before Prowler, but I could not let even this week pass by without honoring Bernie himself. So next week you'll hear a whole hour discussion about how much he meant to the industry and how much he meant to me personally. There's a story I'll tell next week. But that's probably why it's even better to talk to Sean today, because he really picked up my spirits and we had a delightful conversation. And let's just get into it and let's talk about Hobie Brown, the Prowler. So Prowler is your second series for Marvel?
Yes. Yeah, second. Well, Nova was the first like ongoing thing I did for them.
Right.
And then, yeah, Prowler was supposed to be an ongoing thing, but it's getting wrapped up at 6.
Now, how much warning did you know? Did you have a story that you needed to speed up, or were you running into the first arc, or did you have enough lead time?
It was pretty sudden. Are we recording yet, or is this just fun chit-chat?
No, we're recording.
Oh, okay, good.
You don't have to say this twice.
It was kind of a last-minute thing. Because like our first 5 issues tie into Clone Conspiracy, and then issue 6 is our last one that's kind of its own thing. But I didn't really know the series was getting canceled until after I'd written issue 5.
Oh, okay.
So, and originally the way we had done this, we're going to do the series was post Clone Conspiracy. There was going to be Clone Prowler and regular Prowler like out there together.
Oh, interesting.
And so I had written issue 5 like that, with the Clone Conspiracy tie-in ending with Clone Prowler and regular Prowler like being together. And then they're like, we're canceling it and you need to kill Clone Prowler.
Oh, so spoilers for Wednesday.
Well, no. That was issue 5.
Oh, so okay.
Issue 5, he's already dead. So everyone knows that already.
So then curtailing your plans and wrapping it up,
even issue 5 itself, I was like, so then I had to redo issue 5, which was kind of a pain, but I think we still ended up with a good issue 5 regardless. But yeah, I was like, okay.
So was issue 6 like now a farewell issue?
Yeah. So like I had sort of vague plans what to do, because working on tie-ins is kind of a double-edged sword in some ways, because it's cool to be part of a big event, but then on the other end of it, it's like you're hoping for any information about the event. And so a lot of the tie-in was taking up a lot of our time. So I had like vague ideas of what to do next, but I hadn't really like I hadn't set up like my 3-year mega arc about what Prowler was going to do.
Right.
So it wasn't like a huge deal mentally when they said it was canceled. So yeah, issue 6 focuses on regular, always there Prowler and kind of like a send off and kind of like what's next for this kind of, what's next for this guy and who has like a very unfortunate and like sad place in the Marvel universe to me.
Oh. Yeah. Now, as you said, with dealing with the tie-in and trying to get as much information as you could, how close were you into Clone Conspiracy? Like, how much did you know about what Dan Slott was doing?
I knew the general big beats of, you know, it was Jackal, and then he was really, you know, and all the big spoilers that were coming. So mm-hmm. I knew all that stuff. But the thing with tie-ins is weird is like, you want to be involved in what's the big story, but also like Prowler doesn't really have a place in, like, he's not going to be in Clone Conspiracy 5 fighting along with Spider-Man against Jackal and with Gwen Stacy and stuff. So it's a tough, balancing act of like, making it seem like an important part of Clone Conspiracy, but also he can't really be that involved.
Right. Yeah.
Like the main story. So it's like, what can he do on the peripheral?
Yeah. And a lot of Clone Conspiracy was Spider-Man pointing off panel and saying, Prowler, you go there.
Yeah. And sometimes that was like news to me. Or it was like, I was like, Prowler, like he'd show up. I go, oh, he's there in that issue. We better make sure he gets there by that issue. So yeah, it was, I basically knew the big beats, but there, you know, every now and then you go, okay, what is exactly happening? Because like for issue 5, for example, where Prowler is fighting in the headquarters of where Jackal works, it's like, okay, what is going on in there? So I know how to write that scene. And so that sometimes like the detail stuff is stuff you're waiting on.
Right. Now, how are you getting information? Was there a Bible or was it just people would answer your email with individual questions?
At the beginning, there was a Bible of like step by like issue by issue stuff, and like that was always subject to change. The basic way I get information, I would just email my editor, and he would fill me in.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's too bad. It sounds like you were just really starting to get close mm-hmm. to the character.
Yeah, it's funny. Like it happened with Nova too, where it's like it's not really a character that like, you know, obviously I didn't grow up with Sam Alexander because he didn't exist, but like. Right. Even Prowler, like, I didn't really read a lot of Prowler stuff before they gave me this book.
Well, there wasn't a lot of Prowler stuff.
No, he had like a mini series. Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted, but he shows up here and there.
Yeah, he's a character that I know John Romita Jr. created when he was a kid. And then, as an 11-year-old, he was like, here's a villain that's a window washer. And John Romita Sr., who was pressed for time, was like, sure.
Genius.
Yeah. And then he kind of disappeared. And then in the 90s, when Spawn was big, Marvel kind of went, we got a guy that looks like that.
And sort of have that, but yeah. Not really.
Yeah. So that's when the miniseries were around.
Yeah. Because something I tried to touch on in the miniseries and then definitely in the issue 6 is like when you read his Wikipedia page, he's just a dude who gets used when people need him in comic, like writers need him.
Yeah.
And then when you think of that as like a real person, he just like bounces from thing to thing. Like he's a bad guy as Prowler. Then he's a good guy for a while. And then he joins a mercenary group and then he quits and works construction and gets married. But then he leaves his wife to keep being Prowler. And then he joins this other team for a while. And then he works with Spider. It's like, it always just felt like if you look at that as a real life, it's just a guy who's kind of just like bounding around and has no idea what he really is looking for.
So was that your handle on the character? Because
yeah, that was my basic in at first. Like, okay, what's this guy's? And you were trying, like, whenever I try to write anybody, it's like, who is this dude really? Like, why is he doing anything? Why is he doing this? Where's his headspace at? And it's like, and so when we were doing the first issues of the Clone Conspiracy, it was like, the reason he's teamed up with Jackal is because it's like, here's another thing he thinks is going to be like, okay, this is the thing that's going to stick.
Yeah.
Like I've done all these other things. This seems cool. I like that this guy's trying to help people. It's weird. He wears an Egyptian mask, but I'll look past that. but this will be the thing that like I do now. This is, and then by the end of Clone Conspiracy, you know, it falls apart again, and he doesn't have, and also that clone prowler dies. But so it's like this guy's constantly just trying to grab onto something to push him forward, but it seems like he can never find it.
Right. It's like when you're looking for a job when you're freelancing.
Yeah.
You take an opportunity that's presented, and then you go, all right, well, how can I kind of mold myself to mm-hmm. fit in here? And then when it falls apart, you go, oh, I never should have been there at the beginning.
Yeah. Why did I do that?
Yeah.
Well, okay, well, now what do I do? Will I team up with Silver Sable again or help Spider-Man out by dressing up like him?
Right.
Which he's done multiple times in his life.
Yeah, it's kind of like, who will fit this suit?
Yeah, you there. So, yeah, that's like the big, like when I was reading his Wikipedia page, that was the main thing that stuck out is to me, is just a dude who was just kind of bouncing around.
Right. So, you know, let's backtrack a little bit, because as I said, this is your second series for Marvel,
mm-hmm.
and you were working on Nova. How did you get in?
Two comics?
Yeah. Let's go in general. How did you start writing?
Well, basically, when I was in college, I went to college in New York, and I interned at Marvel Comics for like a whole year. I basically mm-hmm. like refused to leave. And then from there, I got a job at Marvel as an assistant editor. And then like I worked at DC as an editor for a while. And then I also worked for DC out in LA and like the TV department.
Okay.
They have out there. And then eventually I was like, all I've wanted to do is write comics that whole time.
But were you writing anything when you were assistant editing? Cause I know a lot of times you're able to just grab an assignment, like a backup in an annual.
At Marvel. No, they didn't let people do that. But at DC I wrote two stories in like, 80 page giants.
Uh-huh.
There was like a Superman 80-page giant, a Batman 80-page. So like, yeah, the first thing I'd ever written for a comic was a 10-page Superman 80-page giant for DC. And then when I was working at DC in LA, I wrote a Flashpoint tie-in one-shot, Grot of War.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I just wanted to write stuff. So eventually I just had to quit at working at DC to start writing comics. Because they wouldn't let, you know, company policy was like you couldn't really write things ongoing for them if you worked there.
Oh, interesting. Funny, because when you look back up until the 90s, the way in to writing comics mostly was to become an editor and then wait for an opening.
Yeah, I think because, like, I know at Marvel, and I think it happened at DC eventually too, like, it just, that became too much of what was happening. And so it was almost just like you would just give your buddy down the hall work. And so I think they tried to put the kibosh on that because it was getting too like
chummy,
not nepotism, but yeah, too chummy and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I quit DC, and then I had for weird tax reasons, I had to wait a half a year before I could do any freelance for them.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah. And then somehow luck and circumstance happened where, you know, I did a 10-page story for Marvel during that 6-month period of A plus X,
mm-hmm.
it was called, with Spider-Man and Psylocke through Nick Lowe. And then I sent that to someone who used to work with at DC, and it was like, hey, I'm writing comics now and I'm able to write for DC now. And then he was like, oh, great. We were just talking about you. Do you want to write New Suicide Squad? And that's kind of how it got started.
Yeah, that's great. It's
amazing. It's very weird. It's just like I worked in comics enough and I know enough people, and, you know, you just kind of keep emailing them.
Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, everybody says right place, right time, but you never think about that time waiting.
Yes.
And there's always the uncertainty of like, well, that time might not even show up.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Definitely when I quit working at the DC, it was like, well, let's hope this works.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you doing anything else, or were you just pitching comics?
That was it. I had I had saved up for money from working at DC, so I was pretty good for a little while, and I was good. And then, you know, I got the 10-page thing from Marvel, and then I got a one shot from Marvel, and then like a 3-issue miniseries that was like 30 pages issues. And then, like, yeah, 6 months after I quit, I got New Suicide Squad.
Right. Now, how much are you pitching? Are you just are you pitching through emails, or are you?
It's tough. It's crazy. It's tough to, like, with the big, with especially Marvel and DC. Like, I was pitching a bit to, like, indie places, but I can't draw at all, so yeah. that's not helpful to them. But with the big two, it's hard to pitch stuff because, like, they've kind of blocked out what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pitch something, if you pitch, like, I want to write Spider-Man, they're like, we got it. We have Spider-Man already. Yeah. We have that covered. You're like, okay.
We have it covered four different ways.
Yeah. And then if you try to pitch on a more obscure thing that they don't have anything for, you know, they'll go, well, that's hard to sell. There's a reason we don't have a book, you know, on that anyways.
Right.
And so it's a tricky situation. Like, the only work I've ever gotten through Marvel or DC is someone coming to me being like, hey, do you want to pitch on this?
Mm-hmm.
And then saying it was good enough to do. It was never like, hey, I've got a great idea. And then being like, oh yeah, this is a great, like, out of the blue.
Right. So say, like, we need somebody on Nova. We need somebody on
Valor. Yeah.
So let's talk about the process of pitching. Cause, it's something that seems more and more ubiquitous and people know that it exists,
right.
But you also hear that no one knows how to do it.
Right.
So let's walk through. You get a call about Prowler.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
Correct. Got a call and they said, hey, we're doing this big, you know, Spider-Man event, Clone Conspiracy, and we're doing some tie-in stuff, and we're doing one with Prowler. Interested? And they, you know, they told me about how he was going to be cloned, and this would be about the miniseries that would tie in would be about his clone, and then after that, theoretically, it would be about the two of them. I said, oh, that's cool. And then they said, all right, write up, you know, at that point, they just say, all right, write up what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll see if we like it.
So they're giving you the overall.
It's pretty casual.
Oh, okay. So they're giving you the overall form. You knew about the clone. You knew about mm-hmm. the team up coming out of
yeah.
it. And
so,
then,
yeah.
And then are you writing up basically a Word doc with your planned story arcs?
Basically for this one, I basically just wrote up what I was going to do for Clone Conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they were like, we'll worry about post, like, cause editors are very busy people.
Right.
And there's a lot going on. So it was basically like, let's figure out Clone Conspiracy first and then we'll figure out the rest of it afterwards. So yeah, I don't exactly remember what I turned in, but yeah, it was if I can find it, it was just like, hey, here's my general thoughts and what I'd like to do for those five issues mm-hmm. and what the kind of story is. And they had told me some other characters that they were like, oh, maybe try to use, you know, we've had this character kind of in the background. It would be great to use. Maybe try to use them. So it's kind of casual. You just kind of, like, it's much harder to pitch things. Like, I've pitched stuff now to, like, more, like, independent places, like your own ideas.
Right.
Those are a little more blocked out and like, here's my idea and the theme and the characters and plots and blah, 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 blah. But for something like Prowler, where they kind of like have some of it all ready to go and those things, it's, you're kind of just pitching, you know, beats and then the main, like, kind of character arc or theme you're going for.
Mm-hmm. And are you going in and doing it face to face?
No. I just type something out and send an email. And I'm in. Yeah, because I'm in LA there, and then they're in New York.
Oh,
so.
Right. Yeah, so it's not worth the flight.
Yeah. And then, Prowler ain't worth the flight.
Or a seventh issue, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. He's not worth a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
The poor man.
So was there a long waiting period after you sent it in? Did you know about anyone else pitching, or was it just kind of you're just getting an approval?
Yeah, I think with Prowler, I don't know. They might have been getting other people, but I think, you know, they had liked what I'd done on Nova,
mm-hmm.
I suppose. And then it was kind of just like, oh, yeah, you know, and then they had a couple notes here or there. But I think with Prowler, it was definitely like a, let's see what you want to do. Okay, that looks good. You know, and then we were good to go.
Yeah, so really casual.
Yes.
Yeah, which is interesting because a lot of people picture like a Hollywood meeting of, someone tap dancing in front of the desk, and then Prowler
Yeah.
comes in, and talking like Stan Lee, because how else would you pitch comics?
No, it definitely with this Prowler series, like it's they go, oh, I think it's different because it's like they know me already. I generally know what they want to do with it already. Like
Right.
I think with a lot of, especially in like TV world or if you're new, it's like you really got to razzle dazzle because you're coming out of nowhere and you're trying to sell a thing no one's ever heard of. Like if I'm pitching a TV show, I'm pitching you a whole new concept, but like they know what Prowler is. They know what Clone Conspiracy is. They know all that stuff. It's basically just like, are you not going to do something stupid?
Yeah, in that
Like,
scenario, it's just like this is happening whether you're here or not.
yeah. There's going to be a Prowler book. Do you want to do it? And I go, yeah. Here's an idea, and they go, great. That's a good idea. Let's do it.
You make it sound so simple, Sean.
Well, it's simple when they ask you. The
Right.
hard part is them asking you.
Right. So,
That's where it gets tricky.
yeah. So now you talk about pitching television as well.
I have not pitched television, but I've been in meetings
Okay.
where TV has been pitched.
Yeah.
When I worked at DC, I for the TV department, I would sometimes go to TV pitches. So I've seen how that works.
Right.
And that's a little more razzle dazzle.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's more money involved, number one.
Yes. And TV execs are confused and have a hard time knowing what things are.
Yes, I understand completely. Well, let's go broader. Let's talk a little bit about what are about your influences? I think like who was it? When did you get started? Who did you read? What characters were you drawn to? What story arcs hit you? Where did your style come from?
Well, the first comics I read were X-Men comics. That's like the first things I got into. I watched the cartoon on TV, and then a friend was like, "Oh, they make comics out of that show." I'm like, "Oh, interesting."
Imagine
So,
that.
yeah. And so, yeah, X-Men comics were the first things I read. And then, but like when I was a kid, like you don't really pay attention to who's writing them as much. Like
Right.
you're not picking up on that as much. So it was just like, I liked X-Men stuff and I got more and more into the universe a bit. But then like the first writers who I really started to pay attention to was like some of like Garth Ennis.
Yep.
I remember when he came on Punisher for Marvel Knights. I was like, this is dynamite. And so like he's definitely one of my favorite people. And then like once that opens, you get I remember and then as you get older, you like the only reason you buy comics are probably who's doing them, really.
Right.
And then it was like I really, really enjoyed like the early Ultimate stuff, like what Bendis was doing and the Mark Millar Ultimates. And then like Grant's new X-Men, like I was that early 2000s like Marvel explosion was a huge deal to me.
Right, because
Right.
that's all Joe Quesada coming in and just shoving the walls down.
Yeah, like I remember like around 1999 or 2000 I was like not reading comics anymore, but then like once they came in and like Garth on Punisher and Grant on New X-Men and like I was reading Hulk, which I'd never done
Yeah,
before,
that's
and
the Bruce Jones run, isn't it?
the Bruce Jones, John Romita Jr. was like I was reading so many more Marvel comics than I had ever done. Just because it was all I don't know, it's just like a great, interesting way to, like X the weird X Force they were doing back then.
Oh yeah, with Allred
Yeah.
and Dupe. I was at that point. I was a really big fan of the Straczynski Romita Jr. Amazing
Yeah.
Spider-Man,
That first arc I loved.
and the Wade Wiringo Fantastic Four. I think is just it's just gold, that
Like
stuff.
that whole that Doom arc.
Ah.
Yeah, so it's like it's like everything was clicking on all cylinders. And so it was just like eating it up. But yeah, definitely I would say and for now like and then, Alan Moore I really loved and it's like it's a lot of British people.
Yeah.
It's all the United Kingdom people that I really like.
Yeah, Grant Morrison, Alan Moore, Garth
Yeah.
Ennis.
Earlier Mark Millar stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, some of Millar's stuff is great. I just reread Old Man Logan.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot how good it was.
Yeah, I feel like that's right as like that starts the tipping point for me. Ultimates is one of my favorite books of all time, but then I feel like his more recent stuff, it's like I read that Time there's some time travel book he did, but it's like it just feels like he has a concept and then he like
is that the,
that's all he does.
Yeah, is that the 1985 book?
No, I forget what it's called. It's like Time Something or Chrono Boys or something. I don't know. Sean Murphy drew it, so it looks great.
The Ultimate Universe was really interesting because I remember at the time they were thinking of just mothballing the regular Marvel Universe because it was selling so well. And it seems like there was like a month where it just stops.
Oh, the Ultimate Universe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that month was when, because I was working at Marvel around that time, like 04, 05, mm-hmm. when it was like, once Bendis moved on to Avengers, like proper, is when like the Ultimate Universe, like the steady decline of the Ultimate Universe right. happened. Because it's like all of a sudden, the people that were making the Ultimate Universe cool jumped into the Marvel Universe.
Right.
And then the creators who had been working on the Ultimate stuff moved on to other things. Well, Bendis was on Spider-Man forever, but eventually the talent who was on the Ultimate stuff like went away.
Yeah.
And moved into the real Marvel Universe. Because like Mark then went on to like do Wolverine and all that stuff. And then it's like, oh, well, now the real Marvel Universe is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then the Ultimate Universe just started getting really weird.
Yeah, they like lost their big time creators, but then also, yeah, they got their own. And then what was cool about the Ultimate Universe went away because then it had its own complicated continuity you had to deal with.
Yeah, it didn't take long. The whole idea, the whole idea of the Ultimate Universe was it's going to be clean. You don't have to know about 40 years of history.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended up like introducing the Fantastic Four in two different ways. Within a year.
Those early years, oh boy, good stuff.
It was a good time. And I do remember that time, like the late 90s. It was almost like being in a bar at Last Call Comics.
It definitely felt that way.
You were just like, I want to like something, and there's some things that are pretty good, but it almost had that It had like this feeling of like the entire industry just going, I think we're done.
Yeah, like looking at its watch, like, I think we can wrap this up.
Yeah, but then that first X-Men movie came out and they were like, oh yeah, we should be on the ball.
What's that? People are interested in these characters?
Yeah, because
I see.
There was that period where I hadn't read X-Men in like 3 or 4 years when that first movie came out. And I was like, you know what? I want to go read some X-Men. And I picked up the latest issue, and it was the time when like Claremont had come back,
yeah,
and Cyclops was dead,
space pirates running around or something,
and Cable had a spear and he was on the team, and I was like, I just don't even know what's going on. And apparently the rest of the world also did that, because then immediately you had Grant Morrison turning it into, well, it's kind of the movie, but it's also really Grant Morrison.
Yeah, it was I love it.
Well, what kind of things would you like to work on?
Anything, but B,
I'd like to not starve.
Yes. I don't want to, I'm not saying doesn't mean I don't want to work on them, but I'd love to do Spider-Man. That'd be great. I'd love to do Superman. I'd love to do that. Those are like the big two that I'd really like to do. Off the top of my head, Punisher would be fun. Like, Punisher's tough because I love I just read all the Garth Ennis Punisher Mac stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's so good. It's like tough, but it's tough to like, it's almost like they should have just stopped publishing Punisher comics after that. It's like, he did it. Like, he's done the Punisher.
Well, I never read the whole series because I read Welcome Back, Frank, and I was like, that was wonderful. And I just walked away.
Because that's like still when they were, that wasn't the Mac stuff.
No, that was a miniseries. It was a 12-issue miniseries, and then they got the ongoing.
Yeah, but if you get a chance, like starting it with the actual like Punisher Max where they could swear and do anything.
Yeah.
That whole run is, I don't know, it's because it's not as like tongue in cheek and silly. Like, it still has like some dark humor to it, but it's, I don't know. I'm pretty blown away by it when I read it.
Yeah, there's always a run you never get to.
Mm-hmm.
That you're always like, yeah. I've got to go. Like, you know, it's like binge watching now.
Yep.
It's binge reading. It's like, you need to read these 40 issues. It's like, yeah. Really? Because I haven't started the Black Mirror yet.
I'm behind on Frasier. I'll get to it. But yeah, the two off the top of my head, I would say, is Spider-Man and Superman.
Well, it's interesting that you want to write both Superman and The Punisher. I feel like you won't get to.
Yeah, that's too bad. But yeah, I feel like, no, I would love to do Superman. Because I feel like what I enjoy doing is taking a character for who he is and then just trying to bring out the best of what that person is. And so it's like, to me, wanting to do Superman, like my Superman and Punisher books would be very, very different. But it would be exciting to do either.
Right. Yeah. Are you working on anything that you can talk about with Prowler, or are you basically, you have time to talk to me?
I've got time to talk to you. I'm in kind of like in the middle of things happening. Like, so I repped Prowler, and so we're seeing if there's anything else to do with Marvel after that.
Right.
And then right now, I just did two kind of little things for Archie Comics. Or I guess one's official. I did like a story for them in this Moose one-shot they have coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Moose is getting a one-shot?
Yeah, he's getting a one-shot.
So you're telling me Prowler can't last more than six issues, but Moose can get a one-shot?
It's a strange world we live in.
Don't tell me it's extra pages. Just don't tell me it's an 80-page giant Moose.
I think it's 30, but don't quote me on that, because I know I did a 10-page one, and I think there's like two other stories in there.
Yeah.
The year of the Moose is what we're talking about.
It's all about Moose now.
Yeah, we live in a Moose-centric world.
And really, the only question is, does Moose get his own TV show, or is it a movie? Because, you know, you can't...
It's going to be one of them.
Well, it's confusing now, two versions of Moose out at the same time.
It's true.
It's like Superman on Supergirl.
The fans will be outraged.
I like the old Moose.
I don't like this new bisexual, curious Moose on the TV show.
Yeah, I have not seen Riverdale yet, but every still image just makes me go, all right.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, are you?
I'm enjoying it for what it is. Like, it's definitely a show where the people in the Archie universe are, like, brooding and about murder and sexy times, but I'm enjoying it for what it is.
All right. What else are you watching?
It's a good question. I'm not great at keeping up on TV things. Big Little Lies I enjoy.
Okay.
That HBO show. I don't watch a lot of like of the Marvel or DC shows.
It's hard to keep up when we talk about that a lot. DC especially, because you feel like you have to watch all four of them every week.
Yeah, and like I just can't get into them either. And so just seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, everybody loved Flash, and I was thinking it was okay. Although every time like the soap opera elements came up, I just felt old. So I was like, I just don't care if you 22-year-olds get together or not.
Yeah, I'm good.
And then Arrow would show up, and I'd be like, well, then I'm leaving.
Good day to you.
Yes.
I'm trying to think what other – like it's also weird just because TV is weird now, so you don't really like –
Right, you have to carve out a weekend.
I don't have a DVR anymore, so it's just like whatever's on Hulu. Oh, I just started watching Legion, actually.
Oh, how far are you into it?
I think I'm one or two behind.
Okay.
I think I just watched episode 5.
What are you thinking about it?
I very much enjoy it. It's an interesting, like, I don't know if I like love it, because like I don't know how attached I am to the
I don't know if you can.
But I like what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know if you can get attached, because it's all about keeping you off kilter.
Yeah, like I love shows where I can really just get like attached. Like I'll like a bad show even if I like the characters. But this is definitely a show where I'm like, I really enjoy everything you're doing. I don't know who I'm rooting for anybody, but I'm fascinated to see.
Yeah, I just want to see where it's going, and I And yeah, it's interesting. I was really surprised that Fargo's coming back because it's the same showrunner.
That guy's, I don't know what he's doing, but
I don't know, because Fargo,
I'd like to know any secrets he might have.
Yeah, I feel like he can capture a tone so well, because yeah, I was stunned that Fargo felt like the Coen brothers and it wasn't the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
And then when this started, I was like, this is like Bryan Singer and Wes Anderson.
It's a great combo.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating, and I like that they're just kind of like, yeah, do a crazy weird show.
Yeah. And I love the initial premise was in the first couple of episodes. It's like he's hearing voices because he's psychic, and he's hearing voices because he's schizophrenic. So yeah, you decide which one is real.
Yeah.
Every episode, it just gets a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, like, the first episode I really liked, and the second episode I was like, I don't know. But, and then I watched the third one, I was like, okay, I'm back on board.
Right.
And you got me again.
It just shows, like, there's a beautiful chaos at Fox mm-hmm. with the X-Men license right now.
Yes.
Because it's like,
they're kind of having some fun with it.
Yeah, and every time they have fun with it, it pays off. And when they try to go back to what it is, it's not working. Because I thought it was amazing that Deadpool was fantastic, mm-hmm. and then X-Men Apocalypse was awful.
Oof.
And then I tried watching.
It was a rough time at the movies.
Yeah, I tried watching it again last week, and I couldn't even get through it. And then Logan was fantastic.
I liked Logan a lot.
Yes, it's amazing how, and now Legion, it's just like, they're doing the opposite of Marvel Studios, which no one wants to do the opposite of Marvel Studios right now.
It's like, I think they must have been like, you know what? We can't beat them at their own game on that, so we might as well. I also think Deadpool making, you know, $300 million helps a little bit.
Right. Yeah, because they didn't want to make it for the longest time.
Like, and then it coming out and being the hugest thing they've done. They're like, okay, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting for the films going forward, because they're positioning Deadpool to be the center of their universe now with Hugh Jackman retiring.
Right.
So it's like, how is everything going to wrap around him?
I know. He's a great character, but yeah, he's a tough one to like build a universe on, because he's basically like gives the middle finger to universes.
Right. He bursts the bubble of tone.
Yeah.
All the time. I mean, not even with the fourth wall breaking, but just he has a very specific tone that when he guest stars in anything else, that story becomes about him.
Yes.
So it's going to be like, you can't put him in a Wolverine story, because it's now a Deadpool story with Wolverine in it. So the fact that they're like building X-Force around him, but Legion gives me a lot of hope. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know Jeff Loeb has a hand in it, who's running the Marvel television,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how closely tied in it is with the movies, if something like this will have an effect moving forward.
I don't know. It feels like it doesn't. And I feel like I'm okay with that. Like, when people were saying, like, where does Logan fit in with the other movies? Part of me is like, it doesn't matter to me. This is just a good movie.
Right.
Like, that's kind of sometimes all I want. Like, it's weird now that we live in a world where the assumption is that movies tie into each other. The Marvel thing has really like shifted how movies work.
Yeah, and X-Men has never quite gotten that, because they keep introducing the same characters with different actors. They've done like Angel twice, they've done Emma Frost twice, they've done Caliban twice, they've done Cyclops three times.
Yep.
And always in a way that contradicts the last one. Not
sort
just,
of like actively contradicts.
Yeah,
like,
it's not just a Don Cheadle or a Mark Ruffalo showing up and being that guy. It's like, yeah, he's a totally different character.
Yeah, he was older in the 80s than
yes,
he was in the 2000s.
Yeah, Emma Frost was my favorite, because she's January Jones in the 60s and somehow a teenager in the 80s.
Yeah, I think you just got to go, well, they look fun punching stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, X-Men Origins quickly became like the Nightmare on Elm Street 2 of X-Men, where they're just like, everything that happened to that doesn't count at all. Or like Halloween 3.
I will be honest, I've never seen Halloween 3 or X-Men Origins Wolverine. So.
Oh, never see X-Men Origins Wolverine. Halloween That's 3 true. Is fascinating. Halloween 3, they will just pop up on AMC, because they decided it wasn't about Michael Myers, it was about this guy who was building Halloween masks, that when you watch the commercial for the Halloween mask and you put the Halloween mask on, then spiders and snakes would climb out of your eyes. So that was, and like the whole movie was about a cop trying to bring down the company that was making the Halloween masks.
Oh, weird.
And then Halloween 4 was just Michael Myers.
What I remember hearing, because the Halloween series was going to be different stuff every time, but because the first one was so successful with Michael Myers, they were like, these Halloween movies are always going to be about Michael Myers now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so maybe that third one was an attempt to break from it.
And it was not a successful attempt.
And people are like, no.
It's also not a good movie.
I mean, that doesn't help a lot of times.
No, if the premise didn't hook you into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. We know the concept's bad, but what if we execute it poorly? Yeah.
What if we not do it well? I was having that with I watched Alien vs. Predator Requiem again.
Oh boy, you're a real glutton for punishment.
I am. Well, I have a problem.
And yeah, sounds like it.
My problem is I will defend bad sequels to good movies.
Okay.
So I am also character loyal, where I have like long box after long box after long box of Spider-Man. Like my Spider-Mans go back to Ditko, and I know there's a lot of books in there that are not worth reading.
Right.
But they're part of that character's history.
Gotcha.
So I ended up doing it when Bill Paxton passed away. I wanted to watch Aliens again. Mm-hmm. And I
Good
watched.
Call.
Yeah. And it was my favorite Bill Paxton performance. And I was like, you know what? This is great. Let me watch the original Ridley Scott again. And, you know, that's great too. And then you go, well, I got this box set. And you know what? David Fincher directed Alien 3. There's got to be something good in it. There isn't. And then Joss Whedon wrote Alien Resurrection. Also not good. But then I made the mistake of going, hey, Aliens vs. Predator is on Amazon for $8.
That movie's rough.
Yeah, but not as rough as the second one.
Oh, right. I forgot there were two of them.
The second one is just unwatchable.
Oof.
But I still kind of enjoy...
Well, it's one of those things that's like, as long as a character you like shows, like, I recognize that the Star Wars prequels aren't good movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, R2-D2 shows up. And so I'm like, no, they're not great. But hey, look, R2-D2's here and there's like lightsabers and stuff.
That was exactly how the X-Men franchises kept going. Look, there's Hugh Jackman again.
Yeah, look. And you're like, okay.
He just streaks across the screen in some of them.
I get it. So I feel like Hollywood has finally realized that like comic movies like are, it's like they don't have to be great. Like they're like, oh, we could just like put these out and people will go see them because they like these characters.
But then
they started to screw it up by making them actually good, and then we got like, then there was like a bar they had to reach,
right? And yeah, and that's the problem, is it gets harder and harder to go back then.
Yeah, because I feel like when Green Lantern came out was a good example of like, if that movie had come out like 8 years earlier, people have been like, all right. But because comic movies had gotten like good by then, people are like, nope.
Yeah,
this is acceptable anymore.
Yeah, it's like the Tim Story Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, fine. They did the Fantastic Four, and I love Fantastic Four.
On screen.
Yeah, I can't watch it now.
Right.
Much less the newer one.
I never saw the newer one.
Oh, it was on, I think, FX or Stars or something.
I feel like I have a pretty good willpower in keeping myself from seeing things that I just know aren't going to be good.
That's an admirable quality.
I'm like, I'm going to stay away from it because I've heard it's not good. I'm not going to punish myself. It's like, well, it's a comic thing. I should go see it. It's like, if I hear it's not good, I'm not going to go. Like, I didn't see Superman Batman until I was on a plane.
It's not good.
And I haven't seen Suicide Squad yet.
Yeah, it's also
which always makes people amused, because like, what, you used to write Suicide Squad? I'm like, I don't want to spend 2 hours seeing a thing that's not good.
They didn't invite you to the premiere?
No, I was fired by the time the movie came out.
We just had Chuck Dixon on, and we were talking about the Lego Batman movie, and he hadn't seen it. And I said, well, Bane's in it. Don't they invite you to the premiere? He goes, oh, they invite you. They don't give you a plane ticket.
Oh, well, hey, at least he got invited.
Yeah.
That's at least something.
How long were you on Suicide Squad?
Like a year and a half. I wrote like 18 or so issues.
Mm-hmm.
Or like 20 so issues. I loved writing that book.
Yeah.
It was sad the day I was fired.
Did you do something wrong?
I don't know if it was one thing. I think they were just like, I think they, because the movie was coming out, I think they wanted to switch gears, but then I also don't think they liked working with me on it.
Fine. That's what I wonder when any freelance job ends.
Yeah.
That's a good 10 days for me of like, all right, why didn't they like me?
Yeah, well, like, that whole book was kind of a crazy situation. Like, the first arc of that book was like a nightmare to do, and I don't think that started things off well, and then kind of just like ended abruptly. And then I kind of got to do some stuff I wanted to do, and then eventually it was just like, all right, we're done with you. Yeah. Alas. But I'm pretty pleased with the stuff we did in that book. So,
well, it's good that
it's got a happy ending all in all.
And is that your longest run? 18 issues?
Yeah, that's the longest. Yeah, because Nova was just 11, and then the Prowler was 6. So they're getting shorter, which is not great. And then Moose is 10 pages. So
pretty soon you'll be running ads.
Yeah, I'll be doing the like family circus. Yeah. It's just one panel.
You'll start with the Hostess, Twinkies ads, and then pretty soon it'll just be a word balloon.
Yep. Oh, if I could get a word balloon, oh boy.
But maybe it'll be Spider-Man's word balloon.
Yeah, if I could do Spider-Man's one word balloon, then oh boy, watch out, world.
I had at one point I had a friend who was inking Aquaman, and he had fallen way behind, and and asked everyone for help. So people that were inkers. So I got to ink Fish in Aquaman. So I have a Peter David issue of Aquaman where I can open and go, there are my fish.
I did it.
And that's as close as I've gotten to working at one of the big two.
You take what you can get.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, it's like the Prowler. You take your opportunities and you try to fit their mold.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know anything about Prowler, but I'm happy to learn. I'm happy to figure it out. Yeah. But I hope people like issue 6. I'm very pleased with it. I think it's one of the better things I've done. So I hope people like it people who've been reading Prowler so far.
Yeah. And Marvel usually doesn't let too many story arcs go without a trade. Have they told you about it being collected?
They haven't, but they usually don't let things go without trade. So I'm pretty sure it'll come out. I just don't know when.
Right.
And like, considering it's tied into an event, I feel like they'll just put all 6 in one go.
Yeah, that's if they don't do an omnibus of everything. I think they've already solicited like a big hardcover.
Oh, of everything?
Clone Conspiracy. Yeah, and Prowler might be in that.
Oh, maybe we'll just do a big Sean Ryan omnibus with Prowler and Nova.
And your 18 issues of Suicide Squad.
Well, that might be tough to breach those two
things. Oh, Marvel and DC have worked together before.
Yeah, they're like, fine, just put it in there.
It's like Punisher Batman.
Yeah. We don't want to republish it, so go for it.
Well, I hope everything goes well. Prowler 6 will be out this week.
It's out this Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I'm making jokes. But, yeah, you know, it's just there's periods, especially I think when you're first starting out, of, like, lulls and stuff. And so hopefully things come up. But, like, I'm working right now on these kids books with a person I used to work with at Marvel that are like for Disney publishing, but they've got Spider-Man in them. And then each book it's like Spider-Man teams up with like a different hero and they fight someone and they learn a lesson and stuff. So I'm also doing those, which is also very nice.
Well, that's cool.
They'll start coming out in October.
Yeah. And the way comics are, there'll probably be more copies of that.
Exactly. More people will read that than Prowler 6 probably.
Right.
So take that, Prowler. Prowler. I feel so bad for him.
Now
he just has to quit being Prowler. That's the way his life gets better.
Yeah, if you hadn't already written that issue, that's how it could have been. You know, the Prowler suit in the garbage can, he's walking down the alley.
He's like whistling, like, this is great. I've done this a long time ago.
I don't mind any of it.
Like, he doesn't have, like, it's funny with a lot of like kind of, you know, B-lister heroes and stuff, like your big ones like Batman and Spider-Man, like there's such a clear reason why they're superheroes.
Yeah.
And, but then when you get to someone like Prowler, it's like, well, why is this guy a superhero? Like, he doesn't have that guilt. He doesn't have like the vengeance or great power, and he's just like a dude who was like, well, I can do this.
Yeah, I had that problem a lot with villains even more.
Yeah.
Because it seems like villains are mostly designed to be used once.
Yeah.
And then it's eventually.
Why are you still doing this?
Yeah, eventually they all get to the point of just like, I hate the hero.
Yeah.
So I'm.
Yeah, that was something I tried to do on Suicide Squad, is like all these people are kind of defined by one thing. And so if you take those one things away from them, like, what do they have left? And what do they, like, think to do afterwards?
Right.
Like with Black Manta, it's like his only thing is like hating Aquaman. But if you take away wanting to kill Aquaman, it's like, well, now what do I do?
Yeah. Yeah.
They got to figure out. They need richer, fuller lives. Most of these characters.
Who doesn't?
That's how they're so relatable.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Sean, how can we find you online and when you're ready to announce your next project?
I'm on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I don't tweet too often, but it's S Ryan. It's at S Ryan XV.
And you can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That is the official Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. You can also like our Facebook page, facebook.com/caffeinatedcomics. That's the main news site for the podcast. And you can listen to every episode of Caffeinated Comics on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. There are close to 300 episodes over the last close to 4 years. You can listen to any one of them. If you'd like to visit Steven at his shop, who's not on this show, but he usually is, you can find him at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. We'll talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!